Hello, my name is Cameron Brin. I'm 28 years old. Today's date is July 16th, 2020. I'm currently in my home office and I am speaking with Barbara Rees, my lovely StoryCorps partner.
Hello, my name is Barbara Rees. I'm age 74. Today is July 16th, 2020. I'm in my dining room in my home. The name of my partner is Cameron Brin, and he is someone that I hope that we can learn a good deal about each other and have a refreshing and informative conversation. Cameron, you want to go first with that one, or you want me to?
Either way is fine. I can kick us off here. So we've got a question here: is how would you sum up your life story in 3 minutes or less? Well, I guess I probably start with. I grew up a little bit all over the country. Started off in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Spent most of my life so far on the East Coast, Richmond, Virginia. Went to university for engineering, and subsequently switched tracks after a couple of years in a small research and development program to management. And I've spent the past couple of years in Cleveland, Ohio, doing management consulting. And I was recently laid off as part of the response to the pandemic this past end of May. So that's where I'm at.
Okay. My life story, of course, is very, very different from yours, starting with the fact that we're so far apart in age, but I like to think that in most circumstances, that doesn't really matter to me. I was born in Florida, grew up mainly in the Cleveland area, most of my life in the Chagrin Falls area. I've been married, had two daughters. I've worked in the medical field for 48 years before I retired. 10 years ago. And over that time, I've participated in and been involved in many and numerous hobbies, activities, and activism.
Okay. All right, so political values. You want to take this one, Barbara?
Okay. My political values,
let me stop you really quick. Cameron, can you ask Barbara the full question just so, you know, listeners have that context?
Sure, absolutely, my mistake. So what we have is, in your own words, could you please describe your political values and what are the most important issues for you personally?
My political values sometimes fluctuate, but they tend to stay on a similar track throughout my life. I would probably be considered more liberal-leaning because my perspective is based on the collective rather than the individual. The issues that matter a great deal to me, of course, as a Black woman, is one of equality and the issue of race in this country. I'm concerned about social programs that support and help those that need it the most. That's very important to me. And unity and able to work together. The current divide in the country concerns me greatly because I see it as a big drawback to any progress or solution to the problems that we have.
Okay.
Barbara, can you ask the question of?
Yes. In your own words, Cameron, can you describe your personal values and what are the most important issues for you personally?
Absolutely. So there's actually quite a bit going on here. We've got a fair amount of things that we're going to be opposed on, but there's also quite a bit of common ground in there. Myself, I would say I tend to lean towards the conservative side of the spectrum. And a large deal of that is going to be the come down to the opposite of what you just stated, Barbara, where I tend to look at things from individualistic perspective, more so than a collective one. Though I would like to highlight your point on unity being very important. And I feel like that is something that is on, well, you could say a downward spiral in the country over the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that is down to just political and social echo chambers where people, you know, people like attracts like, you like hearing your own views reiterated and read back to you. And we run this risk in the country where we have a circle of liberal people telling each other what the conservatives think and how bad that is. And then we have a circle of conservative people telling each other what the liberals think and how terrible that is. And we just get further and further apart. And that polarization, I feel, is a major issue that we need to address in this country. And conversations like this are a major part of bridging that gap. We need to have an exchange of ideas.
Absolutely.
Across those groups. We can't just sit inside our own little echo chambers and rile ourselves up, which is what it seems like we've been doing for a long time now.
That has been the case, and I agree with you. That has been a major part of the problem. Throughout my life, I'd like to think that I've been that kind of person that is very open to other points of views and perspectives. And my relationships, acquaintances, and interactions kind of reflect that, because if you look at it, I've interacted with people across the spectrum of political beliefs, racial identity, gender identity, all of that I've interacted with, or they've been a part of my circle of acquaintances and relationships. So I'm always open to hearing different ideas, different perspectives. I'm not going to say that I would agree with them, but I would like to listen, because I think that there's always an opportunity to learn when you do that.
Absolutely. I'm reminded of a quote. I don't recall who this was from, but it was something to the effect of the mark of a well-educated mind is the ability to entertain an idea without accepting and agreeing with it.
Exactly.
And that's something I fundamentally agree with. I think that's a major thing that we need to work on.
Yeah. I'll ask you this question. Describe your earliest political memory.
Earliest political memory. That one might be a little bit tough for me, because there's nothing specific. There's no one thing that really jumps out at me. I guess the direction I could go with that is one particular political topic that's always been fairly important to me has been the Second Amendment. And I think part of where that might have come from was just as a small child having a fascination with soldiering and things of that nature, you know, playing with little toy guns, cowboys and Indians, cops and robbers, mm-hmm. sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And as I grew, you know, that developed into an interest in firearms and weapons in general, and what they can do, how they work mechanically, how they fit into society socially, you know, what role they play in various dynamics between people. And I think that really is probably what started me down the road of becoming politically informed and politically active. But again, there wasn't one particular instance. It was like flipping a switch. It was more of a slow evolution.
Uh-huh.
What about yourself?
I think back to, I was probably 10 or 11 years old when the Cold War was raging. Mm-hmm. And I remember being very, very afraid of what Khrushchev might do next. I remember my parents discussing the issue around who should be elected as president to kind of deal with this situation. It was a scary time, and I listened in on my parents' conversations, and I read the local newspaper on what was coming next. And that sort of introduced me to how politics plays such a huge role in our own feelings of security and safety. And just given my nature, I think the fact that curiosity is what drives me to almost everything. I read a lot. I asked questions of teachers and mentors, and it was food for thought. So as time went on and various other things occurred throughout my childhood, early adulthood, led me in the direction to find out more.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely identify with that sense of curiosity and wanting to you know, devour all the sources you can find.
Exactly.
Become better informed. I think it's kind of interesting looking at some of the parallels that we have today. Obviously, there's not a there's nothing as rigid as the Cold War going on today, but there's it's becoming clear that there's these ideological dividing lines on the geopolitical front, where we have different ascendant powers, and you know, the United States has kind of been the world power since the fall of the Soviet Union, but we're not really alone in that sense anymore. We have an ascendant China, India, are developing from economies where they just were basically cheap labor,
mm-hmm.
2-3 decades ago, into at least regional, if not global powers. And China in particular is kind of flexing their muscles. And ideologically, they're, you know, it'd be pretty hard to find something further from Western ideals or classically Western ideals that the United States has really represented for pretty much its entire existence. So we have this ideological battle going on again. And this time it's not the USSR. We can look at Russia too, but I find it interesting how we have these dynamics globally going on, where we have this juxtaposition of value systems and how those are positioned with respect to global power and influence.
Right, right. And I've always thought that we should have anticipated and expected this. If you look throughout history, as far back as you can go, there are times when there's an empire that's on top and one that is not. And especially now that everything is so globally connected, we're feeling it more and we're seeing it more. And the U.S. was in such a position of authority that now we have to share. We're going to have to totally reassess our worldview. And I don't see that happening to the extent that it should.
Yeah, it gets, there's all kinds of interesting things to go into here. But I guess one of the pertinent ones that's relatively fresh in everyone's minds is the response to the coronavirus kind of threw into sharp relief the fact that we don't have the manufacturing capacity in this country to generate medical supplies, whether it's masks, whether it's tests, you know, what have you. A lot of what we needed and were relying on for preventative measures and things of that nature, we have to get shipped in.
Right.
And all of a sudden we're in this unenviable position of being strategically reliant upon countries that don't necessarily have the United States' best interests at the forefront.
Exactly.
And that's kind of an interesting thing to realize when we still have these ideological conflicts of interest going on at a global scale, on top of just the conventional, what's the word I'm looking for? That's going to bother me. the fact that countries look out for themselves, basically, right? Their sovereignty, you know. And I think that's something that's also kind of been interesting to see in the political discourse, is the president's focus on, I guess, it was probably a couple of years ago that it was really big, was America First was his idea. And, you know, whatever you may think of the president or a variety of his other actions, positions, what have you, that in and of itself, I think, is a fairly universal concept among countries. You know, I think we like to think of ourselves as one global society these days, and that everybody, you know, anybody anywhere, got the value of any human anywhere is equivalent. But we're still organized into countries, right? And humans have this this tribal nature about them. We biologically, we like an us versus them dynamic. We lapse into that very, very easily. So when it comes down to it, if you have a factory that's making masks and your government says, hey, we need those masks here, it's a very difficult decision to say, well, those people over there in the next country over need them too. So we're going to split them and divide them evenly, right? Mm-hmm. Leaving aside any questions about whether you can have some sort of embargo or enforcement of, you know, can you export them or not logistically? But I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
An interesting aspect of it.
Well, the way I look at it is how we got here is that the United States was a huge manufacturing country. When I was growing up, my father worked in manufacturing. That was the where you went to have a good middle class wage and able to, you know, buy homes and things like that. Well, the people in charge of that, the corporations, decided that cheaper labor would bring them higher profits, so they moved those operations to other countries. The workers and the people here didn't have a whole lot to say about that. And it's left us in a position of where we don't make much of anything. We rely on other people to make it for us. And that, I think, puts us in a position of weakness, especially during a pandemic.
Yeah, we're relying on it. Yeah, I think that's interesting because we have, there's these strategic questions. You know, can we make what we need? Like you're saying, we don't make anything anymore.
Right.
You can't make it, you're reliant on whoever does make it to trade with you for it or to give it to you. And that, that's obviously a contrary interest to making everything as cheap as possible. Because sure, if we hyper-specialize and we have, you know, a factory in China making widget A and a factory in India making widget B, and we can ship all the little pieces and assemble them, sure, maybe that's the most economical way to accomplish something. But is it necessarily the best for everybody involved?
In my view, it's not. And that was why I was saying that in my outlook on life is to look at how it affects the entire country, the collective, how people beyond those with the wherewithal to move their businesses elsewhere and make more money, as opposed to make some money, but don't make it so that we're at the mercy of these other countries should something occur that's beyond our control. So greed is at the bottom of it, I think. And that has been part of why we're in the situation we're in now.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting, I keep using that word. I think it's stimulating to think about this kind of thing. And there's questions that come up when we start examining that problem around what level of involvement the government should have. Because obviously, if we're just talking about a business or a corporation, their reason for existence is to make money, right? They
sure.
want to create a product that provides value to some people who then give you money to continue making the product, and it becomes a cycle. But the object of the company is only to make money. They don't have the strategic interest of their home country at heart necessarily.
Exactly.
Or the interest necessarily specifically of the workers or of any subgroup. The company as an entity just exists to make money.
Right.
Expecting a company to do something other than that is where we start to get ourselves in trouble because that's not what they're for.
I just want to interrupt for a second because I feel like we're like having a little bit of a policy kind of debate here.
Yeah.
Where I really want to hear more about your guys' personal experiences and your thoughts on, you know, like where we are as a country right now, political divisions and how we can kind of find common ground. So I put a question in the chat. I'm wondering if anyone wants to read that.
Okay, I'll read it. Is there anything that troubles you about the way people who share your beliefs communicate them to others?
Yeah, I think that we touched a little bit on this earlier, but I think the polarization, the echo chambers lead to a lot of ad hominem attacks on the people involved rather than confronting or challenging ideas mm-hmm. coming from the other side, whatever side that might be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that goes for both sides fairly well. And just this, you know, a lot of just logical fallacies, straw manning positions and things of that nature, rather than really deeply engaging with the ideas being presented on the other side and trying to find what common ground there is and trace any differences back to the differences in the core underlying premises or principles that you're starting from and building your position up from.
So can you think of an example?
I guess one thing that pops to mind is, and again, this is fairly recent, and I'm going somewhat hypothetical here. I don't have a specific interaction in mind, but things of this nature definitely happen to be a fair amount, or I've observed a fair amount of, is when there's somebody, for instance, the question of police brutality comes up, and somebody asserts a claim, you know, the Black Lives Matter claim, and another person will respond with All Lives Matter, for instance, or some challenge about Black Lives Matter as an organization, something that that can come up from time to time is an assertion that, well, you just don't care about Black lives. And that's not necessarily what was said, that's not necessarily what was trying to be communicated, but it's a very convenient way to dismiss any point that was being made by the person who's interacting and trying to have a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
It's charitable. I won't deny that some people are just attempting to shut down discussion by throwing out hot button phrases out there. But if somebody's legitimately trying to have a discussion, have an exchange of ideas, slapping a straw man of their position on them and then just dismissing them out of hand is not productive. It doesn't help your position. It doesn't make you look good to a fence sitter or somebody who's watching the exchange. It sounds good to the people who agree with you already, right? So we get right back to the echo chamber.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You rile up everybody who agrees with you, look how great we are, and look how terrible these other people are. And again, that goes both ways. For instance, I've seen similar things happen on with respect to the Second Amendment, for instance. I'll be on a blog site or something, and down in the comments section, you know, we all know just how wonderful comment sections tend to be on websites. You'll have something similar where somebody will raise a point that isn't necessarily common or popular with the group who frequents that environment, and they'll basically turn it into a straw man. They'll take it to an extreme and say, well, you know, they just said this, that's ridiculous, you know, get out of here, we don't want to talk about that. And it's not it's fundamentally unproductive.
It absolutely is, and I think that part of it is that it's very easy to be dismissive, disrespectful, mean, anonymously, which a lot of this occurs on. If you're part of a site or part of a chat or a group that's discussing something and nobody really knows who you are, you can be as vicious as you want to be without repercussions. And I think far too much of that happens. I've been pleasantly surprised since so much has occurred in the last few months with the pandemic and with the protests and things like that, that I've had conversations with people that I hadn't discussed things with in quite a while. But there's this need to reach out and understand. And that gives me hope because it helps me think that maybe all the vitriol and things that we see on a day-to-day basis, that beyond that are people that truly want to find solutions to the problems and are willing to self-reflect and see how they can assist in that or how they're contributing to it and stop. So I've seen that among the people that I communicate with, and I do try to do that to an extent because I just feel it's necessary and to keep an open mind while doing it. I think that that's the only solution in the end, because if you've made up your mind and you're unwilling to take in any new information or consider any other ideas and unwilling to be challenged, then we're at a status quo. Now, I recognize that the status quo benefits some and not others, and the need to keep the status quo is very, very strong. But as time will tell and history shows us, that the status quo can exist for just so long. Change has to happen. But how we change and where we get from point A to point B and how we do that is the difference. But things change, have to recognize that.
Yeah, we're not all Romans speaking Latin after all.
Exactly. I have a question for you because this has been one of the great divides among people that I've interacted with. We choose a side. We said, I'm liberal, I'm conservative. And I don't think that most people are all one or the other. If you look at how they perceive various things, they might have a more conservative or liberal lean on some issues and then be somewhere in the middle on something else and might even go over to the other side on something else. So to you, what does being a conservative mean?
That's a very good point. And there's a lot to get into there. I guess to me, most of the time I'll use liberal and conservative in what I guess I would describe as the conventional or the contemporary sense, even though it is imprecise and it doesn't capture all the nuance that an individual will have. But I guess when I tend to use them, I tend to use them in effect almost as stand-ins. You can almost use them as stand-ins for the relative positions of the two major parties, but even that's not quite accurate. Mm-hmm. But generally, for instance, a typically liberal position would be pro-choice, whereas a typically conservative position would be pro-life, and on through the hot button of the big issues. That said, I completely agree with you that generally an individual will not uniformly be, quote unquote, liberal or conservative on all of these issues. There's going to be different, they're going to have different perspectives on the different issues. And I think that's one of the problems that we have in this country that is related to this idea of echo chambers is the fact that we have the combination of a two-party system where we have these two platforms and you basically pick the one you dislike the least. And then we also have a first past the post electoral system for the most part. And what that, are you familiar with first past the post and what that means?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so first past the post is, again, it's the way most of our elections are structured. And the basic idea is that there's a number of votes that you need in order to win the election. And the first candidate to get past that number is the winner. And what that leads to is you have a lot of people who aren't really voting for the person they think they align most closely with. What they're doing is they're voting against the person they think is most likely to win and they disagree most vehemently with. Yeah. And that's how we get to an election like 2016 where we had Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Now, who do you know who is 100% aligned with either one of those people or happy with our choice at that point?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The reason we got to those two in the primaries was because everybody was voting, well, as long as it's not that guy,
right,
and down to these two that nobody really likes, but at least it wasn't the one I really, really don't like. And that just serves to further polarize.
Hey, Cameron, I want to interrupt just because I think if I understood Barbara's question, I think she was asking, what does conservative mean to you in terms of your views on certain issues so she could maybe better understand your political beliefs? Is that correct, Barbara?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Instead of, just talking about the system, which of course is, has lots
of flaws.
Yes,
what it is.
But this is about getting to know who you are.
Got off a little bit on a tangent there. yeah, absolutely. So I guess, when I use conservative to describe myself, what do I mean by that? Okay. So for myself, I guess I would primarily hit on limited government is a big thing for me. I feel like there's a small subset of activities that are the legitimate purview of government, where the government needs to be involved. You know, national defense, obviously, the post office, establishing and maintaining borders, treaties, trade agreements, things like that. And there's a lot of other areas where the government currently is involved where I don't feel like they necessarily are.
What are some of those?
There's an awful lot these days where the federal government, I think, is involved where they shouldn't be. And that traces back to our constitutional system. And the way the Constitution was set up, it was supposed to outline a specific set of governmental activities, and then everything else was supposed to be left to the states, right? The federal government can do X, Y, and Z. If it's not X, Y, or Z, they don't have the authority or the authorization to do that. And today we have a lot of bureaucracy and things like, I guess just an example off the top of my head, the Department of, or is it the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms,
mm-hmm.
really started out as a way to enforce a tax on, I believe it was primarily machine guns. It was basically a subset of Treasury originally. And they said, okay, we're going to tax these things. And now we have hundreds, if not thousands, of laws and regulations, some of which the legislature never passed. These are just interpretations that the bureaucracy has come up with.
Okay, I see where what you're saying, but I do think that there are areas that the federal government must take a stand in or take control of. I hearken back to the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that had the federal government not stepped in, had that been left up to the individual states, that I might still not be permitted to go into certain places. I might still not be permitted to go into certain professions. So I think that we don't live in 50 different countries. We live in a United States. So there has to be some level of cohesiveness that brings the states together in a common goal. And I think that in those areas, when the states don't step up and do it, where you don't have a hodgepodge of different policies based on the state you're living in, then that's necessary.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that goes back to, at least for me, that goes back to my understanding of the purpose of government as to protect the rights of its citizens. And for a state to become a state, they had to structure their government such that it conformed to the Constitution. And the Constitution is supposed to, again, be protecting the rights of the citizens from a potentially overbearing totalitarian government. So the Civil Rights Act, for instance, or the Civil Rights Movement, you had a variety of states who were promoting and endorsing activities that are contrary to the Constitution and the rights of their people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfect example of where the federal government needs to step in.
Exactly.
To enforce those rights and protect those rights of the people that are not being upheld by the state or the local government in that instance. That's a perfect example of where that's absolutely, to my mind, a completely legitimate purpose of government.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's one minutia.
Sorry, since we're running out of time, I just want to make sure Barbara gets to, you know, kind of talk about what being liberal means to her. Can you ask her that, Cameron?
Sure. Barbara, what when you say you lean liberal, what does that mean to you, position wise or?
Position wise, I lean to, like I said earlier, that my feeling is that we have to see outside of ourselves in order to have a culture and a country that works together to build something that's good for everybody. I think that if you consider others when policies and legislations are passed, you look at how it's going to affect and impact the entire populace and try to form policies around that rather than each person kind of having their own idea of what it should be and fighting against that. So I think that liberal is being open to policies and legislation that helps everybody and not just some.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I feel like that's an area of common ground for us. You can't legislate or run a government based on the interests of some subset.
Yeah, you have to look at the whole picture. And I think that to a degree in several years, that in the last several years, that has been the case, because I think the preference has been for those in a position of affluence to have more control, more power. The fact that there's so much money involved in our elections, I think points to that. So I'm concerned about it. I don't see the benefit for everyone in that respect. And I think that I would definitely support someone who would try to make that more equitable.
Yeah, I agree with that. The amount of money in elections and in lobbying is at the very least concerning.
So it closes a lot of people out of the conversation, out of the authority, out of the power to make change and to do things, because even to run now, you've got to probably be a multimillionaire. So any new voices that are not that are drowned out or not ever heard. And that to me is a big concern.
As we're wrapping this conversation, I just wanted to ask you guys, because in a couple months, we're going to have this November election. And I think people, you know, were very divided about the last election. What are your kind of predictions for what might happen? And how do you think the country can come together, whether President Trump is reelected or whether Joe Biden or a third party is elected?
I don't have a lot of hope if Trump is elected, because the division has gotten wider and broader under his administration. And this is my personal thing. I would be very, very upset if that were the case, because I think my sense of hope would be pretty much doused.
Okay. So I guess I would look at it from a slightly different perspective on that one. I think that conversations like this, again, reaching across the aisle, having an exchange of ideas, and interacting with one another in a positive fashion, is really going to be incredibly important regardless of what happens in the election. I think this one's shaping up to be a repeat of 2016 in that no matter what happens, there's going to be a lot of people who are very unhappy. And we need to avoid retreating into our little tribal circles of people who think just like us and telling each other how bad the other circle is. We need to have these conversations and try to understand where each other, where everyone is coming from and why they're thinking what they're thinking. So I feel like conversations like this with StoryCorps are an integral part of that. And we need to continue to have these conversations, and not just here either, but in your day-to-day life. Try to keep yourself out of an echo chamber, try to continue interacting with people you don't necessarily agree with. And don't buy into what the cable news anchor is telling you all those evil people think.
Exactly. Yeah, it's my inclination to question everything and to then arrive at my own conclusions. And I think if people, more people did that, they'd be less easily manipulated by the political system and be able to make their choices based on information and knowledge as opposed to what they've been told to believe. And I think that that's a major problem in our society today, is that we're kind of led by the nose as to how we should or should not think about certain things.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that 100%. Don't let yourself be spoon-fed. Thank you.
It's been great talking to you. I enjoy these kinds of conversations. I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here, 100%.
If you guys are okay with it, I have one more question I'd love if you guys could ask each other.
Sure. What are your expectations coming into this conversation, and did they change?
I guess I didn't really know completely what to expect coming into this conversation, largely because, you know, I knew nothing about you prior to meeting you an hour ago, Barbara. So I was hopeful that it would turn out largely as it has, and we could have this productive exchange and talk through various different topics and better understand where each other come from and how we think. I don't think that really changed for me throughout our conversation. I'm thrilled that it turned out as it did, because I agree with you. I think these conversations are wonderful.
Yeah.
What about you? What were you expecting?
Well, I didn't have any hard and fast expectations. I was hopeful, because of the venue that we're using, that it would be a constructive one, and it turned out to be such. I think that this is an ideal way to exchange ideas and thoughts and policy support systems and things like that. So I'm pleased with the way it turned out. I'm glad that we had the conversation. Some of the stuff that you said is really food for thought for me, and I will consider it, and hopefully it will influence the way I see some things in the future.
Great. Well, thank you both. I'm going to stop the recording now.